Blog Talk Radio.
And now it's time to play out loud. It's the Tony Lane Show.
Another action-packed edition of the Tony Lane Show. It is the truly fabulous Tony Lane along with Maris as we welcome you to episode 347.
Hello.
The Tony Lane Show. We, of course, what's going on, Maris? Of course, we want to remind you of, as always, that you can log on to TonyLaneShow.com where you can hear the new shows and the old shows and any show you want. And then, of course, you subscribe to the show in iTunes and on Google Play. The new episodes, as they are published, will be released to the device of your choice as we put them out. And it's easy peasy, free of charge. Wonderful thing. Of course, if you want to hear the show live, you can listen blogtalkradio.com/Tony Lane Show Sunday nights 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. At least now it's Eastern Daylight Time, and then I guess
yes,
it turns Eastern Standard Time once we go into Standard Time. Even though Standard Time is shorter than Daylight Time now, so it's not so standard. That's kind of weird. You get 7 months of Daylight Time and 5 months of Standard Time.
Well, from what I understand, there's a lot of places that are actually trying to do away with the time change, which I kind of understand because originally it was just to save gas and everything because electric wasn't really prominent and things like that back in the day and to have more sunlight to work. But
farmers.
Like, right, for farmers and like Victorian era, you know, that 1800s, you know, when they were just building industries and warehouses and having centers with people working, it's like you wanted as much sunlight as you could get through those windows for as long as possible before you'd have to turn the lights on.
Exactly.
So if you could change time, but now that doesn't matter. I mean, we're beyond that. So it's like we should really settle on just one time like everybody else.
I would say if we did, I'd be all for daylight time being the standard time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine.
You know, because I do like in the winter that under daylight time, it doesn't get dark till damn near 9 o'clock, whereas if it was standard time, it'd be 8 o'clock.
Right, yeah.
So, for that reason alone, I would stick with the daylight time and make that the standard time, and that would just be it.
Actually, also, surprisingly enough, about time changing and things like that, they've found that it actually has a physical, like, negative health impact on people that do it.
Oh, well, you know, it fucks me up every year. You know,
oh,
that.
It takes me, like, a week to recover, and they say the longer that you continue to do it, the longer that lasts, and you're actually physically doing damage to your body by doing it, and it's like, I don't want to do this shit anymore.
Oh, you know it happens. I mean, we experience it. You know that. Big time. But who knows? Maybe one day they'll change it. I mean, I know President Bush changed it where the daylight time does last a month longer.
Well, there's already certain states that don't change.
I think there's only two.
But still, that's...
I think
that's
it's Arizona.
Arizona and another one.
Yeah. Is it Alaska? I want to say Alaska.
No, I don't think it's Alaska. But, I mean, regardless, obviously, those states agree with not changing time. So, I imagine eventually everybody else is going to follow.
I agree. I mean, why bother? And it's such a pain in the ass to go changing all your damn clocks. I mean, even though most of them change by themselves now.
Yeah, that's the good thing. Like, nowadays, a lot of them change by themselves. But, like, man, back in the day,
I mean, I think I only had to change a couple of things this year. Everything else pretty much did change automatically, I believe.
I only have one old-school alarm clock in use that is digital that you have to manually set. So that was the only one I had to change. Everything else is phone, Fitbit, you know, all that stuff.
Well, the microwave, had to change that manually.
I don't even set my microwave. I'm one of those people.
See, I have to have all the clocks correct and synced, and, you know, I can get crazy with that. Except for the old school clock. I actually have a physical old school sort of clock with the pendulum and all. Like, you know, it's a stylus clock. And it's never right. And I can give a shit whether it's right or not. It's just there for decoration, more or less.
They are good-looking things. I mean, I grew up in a house that had an antique grandfather clock with the big chimes that hung down and moved and the giant pendulum that swung. Like, and that thing was like 6 or 7 feet tall. It's like, I can appreciate a good-looking pendulum clock.
Right. But whether they're right.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. As long as you hear the dinging and it looks good, that's all that matters.
And see, I can't even deal with the noise. Like, it used to annoy me hearing the pendulum hit the wood, and it would make drive me nuts. So I took the fucking batteries out of it so it stopped.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Because it just annoyed the hell out of me. But...
I can understand it, but that goes back to a lot of people have different, like, I guess, tolerance thresholds for certain noises, like that little, like, ticking noise or, like, white noise or anything like that. I can just zone that stuff out, no problem. It's like, nails on the chalkboard bother some people. Doesn't bother me at all, but, you know, everybody's different.
Yeah, it used to drive me nuts. I mean, I remember even as a kid... things like that. And my mother was just the opposite. She liked things that chimed and made noise. And it would drive me and my brother insane. Like, we hated shit like that. So.
Like I said, everybody's got their own particular taste. That's why they make all different types of clocks.
True. And some are for style. Some are for actually telling time.
True.
You know? So. On to the business here. Enough about clocks, I guess.
Speaking of crazy time, I don't know if you got to see it, but I totally didn't realize that UFC was on earlier today because it's in Glasgow, Scotland.
Oh, wow, and they're in a different time zone.
Yep. So it ended, I think it's 7 or something like that.
Kind of like when WWE did, like, that Beast in the East show, that for us, it was 6 o'clock in the morning that the show came on.
Yes,
nighttime in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge time. And like, when they do the London shows, you know, they tape them around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, our time. But
it's like 2 a.m. their time.
In England, it would be 8 o'clock. I think they're like 5 hours difference.
It depends, because I've watched boxing matches, like when Ricky Hatton's box, say, and he's obviously from Manchester, England. They've had them at like 4 a.m. in the morning just to make sure they're on at prime time for like pay-per-view here in America for like 10 p.m. for us.
Oh, wow. To actually play it live in the United States. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not sure, like, obviously, this one that they just had today with Gunnar Nelson and I'm forgetting the other guy's name right now. They played it at the time that they were actually showing it live there. And obviously, it was earlier here. But I've definitely seen cases where they've waited and done at 2, 3, 4 in the morning.
Wow. No, that's really sad. I mean, I've seen them do that. I remember back in the day, I don't know if they still do it, but with the in the casinos in Atlantic City, they would do some of the Asian shows, and they wouldn't even start till like 2 in the morning. And they would do that deliberately because a lot of the clientele would be coming from New York and stuff, and they worked late, and they waited until everybody got off and everybody was able to get there, and it was like crazy. Everybody else is going to sleep, and their show's just starting 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So now we do want to acknowledge the unfortunate passing of George Romero. The father of the zombie movies, and he passed away earlier on Sunday at the age of 77 after a short but aggressive battle with lung cancer, as it's been put. But you know, probably best known.
He didn't look good when I met him, and that was a couple years ago.
Oh wow. You actually did meet him before?
Oh, yeah. I have his autograph. I have pictures with him.
Oh, that's great.
Like, I go to horror conventions.
Coming up, and I might actually go again because my girl's going to be there again. I met Danielle Harris.
You're talking Monster Mania, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you ever gone to a horror convention?
I went to one because I wanted to meet Danielle Harris, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
I got my picture. It's like my prized possession.
Go. Any horror convention you can go to, go. They're fantastic. I can't tell you the awesome people I've met. I actually met the woman that played Jeannie from I Dream of Jeannie at a horror convention.
Barbara Eden?
She was signing Jeannie bottles.
Oh, wow.
And she was gorgeous in person. Holy shit, she was beautiful.
Oh yeah, she looks great. I may go again. Who knows? I mean, it's hard to say no to Danielle Harris. Sorry.
I mean, for me, it's just hard to say no to horror conventions. So.
Well, I mean, I love horror movies.
But yes, we're good old B movie fans.
And one of my favorites of all time is Night of the Living Dead. Certainly one of the best movies in my opinion ever made.
Mm.
And it is just a classic horror film. Certainly started that whole zombie subgenre in the horror category. So certainly George Romero left a mark that will be forever left in pop culture and entertainment. It was a low budget movie.
It was. I actually also met the woman that played Barbara and the weatherman from that movie, from the original, the black and white one.
Right, which is the best one.
Atmosphere.
Judith O'Day is the actress that played Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, of course, she was fantastic. They're coming to get you, Barbara. One of the best lines.
But the
history of horror movies.
The atmosphere of the movie, especially being in black and white, was so just overwhelming.
Right. The fact that the film was in black and white, it was done for only $114,000. Now, this is in the late 1968. Now, unfortunately, because of a fuck up with where the copyright was placed, the movie fell in the public domain, which it remains to this day. So basically anybody can put, you know, Night of the Living Dead out because it's public domain. We could put our Tony Lane special edition of Night of the Living Dead out and they can't do shit about it because it's in public domain.
Right.
But it's still a fantastic movie, and I'm sure, you know, it a lot of people still love it to this day. And when you look at the movie, not only did it kind of start the whole zombie thing in movies to begin with, but it also kind of made some political statements. I mean, when you really look at it, the fact that Dwayne Jones' character, who was Ben, was actually the strong lead character, and this was right in the heart of that. In the late 60s, I think Dr. King had just been murdered in 1968 and all that was going on, and to put a African-American in such a prominent lead role.
A strong lead role.
Exactly. And he was the only one with sense in the whole damn house. Really.
But, like, he was portrayed as, in realistic terms, he was portrayed as the hero. And it's like, you did not ever see that.
Right. So that was very groundbreaking and political. And then the irony, I mean, you could even see, parallel to today in terms of the political statement, the fact that the African-American character, he basically survives the Night of the Living Dead only to get killed by the police the next day. I mean,
yes.
You can see the parallel even to today's society. In terms of what happens a lot of times, unfortunately. Certainly was a groundbreaking movie, to say the least.
There was nothing ever out like that before. Ever.
No, absolutely not. It's been redone several times. The one remake that they did in the early 80s, the Barbara character...
That's the early 90s. It was 89.
Well, she was portrayed much stronger in the monkey. I think she was the only one who survived in the one remake I saw where it's like a
she's
a
got
blonde,
the short red
the
hair.
Short haircut.
That's 1989.
That was 89. Okay.
Yeah, I have all of them.
She was portrayed a lot stronger. Like, Juzo Day's Barbara was basically comatose once her brother got killed and the zombie chased her, and she was a typical damsel in distress. And then once she got in the house, she was just fucking shot throughout the whole movie, which
she
I loved.
Yeah.
But
I think, though, at the time, like, if you look at the type of movies for the original black and white one, it's like you were expected to have the leading lady be that weeping, I need a man to help me, I can't do anything for myself, I'm too scared. Like that was a really common character archetype.
True. And then you went through all of the women's liberation and all of the 70s. So by the time they get to the 80s and do a remake, the Barbara character is portrayed a lot stronger. And, you know, she's the one that really saves the day in that version of the movie. She's the one, you know, she's the only survivor, really.
Yes.
And she walks away from it. Like, the cops don't kill her the next day like they did that.
Yeah. I felt like, I remember the first time I watched that movie, and then to watch him get shot and killed, and it's like, are you kidding me? It's like, are you kidding me? Really? Like, I wanted to punch the TV. You have no idea.
And then it was remade again in the 2000s, like in an animated version. Actually, speaking of my girl Danielle Harris, she was actually the voice of Barbara, I think, in the animated version.
I have not seen the animated version.
It wasn't really that good.
Mm.
And I think they did another, like, Night of the Living Dead 3D or some shit. Like, they've remade it a million times, you know?
I can't even tell you how many Night of the Living whatever I have. I literally must have a bookshelf of every version of Night of the Living Dead, all the remakes, knockoff versions, ripoff versions about different subjects, like everything. I have the Luciano Felucci ones, which are the Italian ones. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
No.
He's considered like the Italian George Romero. He made a movie called Zombie with just an I at the end of it. And it's considered the continuation, like Night of the Living Dead 2. That was his take on how he did it. His movies are fantastic, like really fantastic. And it's all like crazy good, just Italian horror. Really good.
And but, some of those foreign horror movies are really out there. Some of them. I mean.
Oh, absolutely. But, like, I have all those in there. So, like, I can't even tell you how many times the Night of the Living Dead story, because it's in, obviously, public domain, you can clearly tell it's a straight ripoff of it. And there's nothing that he can do or he could have done about it.
Right. Which is unfortunate. I mean, because you create something and then you fucking, you know, it's stolen, you know.
Yeah.
That sucks. But I think it was 06 when the 3D version of Night of the Living Dead was made.
If you got the DVD version, it came with the old school 3D glasses, you know, the white little cardboard ones with the blue and red.
Oh, wow.
You got to sit there and watch them.
I wonder would it work, because, I mean, I actually do have a 3D TV. I wonder would it work on...
To tell you the truth, if you want to experience a movie, like, you obviously know The Nightmare Before Christmas, but I don't know if you ever heard of Coraline, the guy that did the puppets for Nightmare Before Christmas. He did a movie called Coraline. And the 3D version of that movie was fantastic. And you know what? The 3D Blu-ray version, which is the one I got, and I don't have a 3D TV, was amazing. And that's got the blue and red glasses with it, too. It's like they have you go through this program where it shows you stuff and your eyes adjust to the color. Before you know it, you're not even seeing the blue and the red, and the stuff's like just coming out of the screen at you. It's really, really good. If anything, I would say pick that Blu-ray up to try the 3D out, because I know for a fact that works.
It was Night of the Living Dead, Darkest Dawn. That's the animated one where Danielle Harris provides the voice of Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Todd is the voice of Ben. I think he was the actor that played Ben in the remake, the 1990 remake, I believe.
Yes.
And he's the same voice in the animated one, so that's cool. I just want to make sure that's him. But, I mean, like, looking at his picture, I'm like, that's the same guy. I'm pretty sure. Yes, that is
him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely him. So, yeah, he was Ben in the 1990 version, and okay, it was Patricia Tallman was the actress that was Barbara, and she is a redhead. I thought she was blonde.
No, she's a redhead. She's a real bright redhead.
Yeah, she is. Now that I'm looking at these pictures, I'm like, wow, she is a redhead.
I've watched that movie so many times, too. It's like, she's a striking redhead. Like, she really stands out. I bet they picked her for like a reason. Like, when you look at like the situation like this, and at the end she's walking triumphantly, she's got that flaming red natural hair.
Right.
And it's like it sets her apart from everyone, and it really gives it a different like feel to it.
Now, Judith O'Day was a blonde.
Yes, she was a blonde.
Maybe that's what I was confusing. Who knows? Well, I know Judith. I know that one very well. Because that's the one, I actually have the original one on DVD or something. But the remake, I've seen it on TV a few times. I've watched, anytime it's on, it's a movie I watch. It's one of those things.
I have it signed by George Romero and the first.
The original one?
I have all of them. I brought, anytime I've gone to see George Romero at any kind of like conventions or anything, I've brought every possible thing. I even have you remember Bub from Dawn of the Dead, that takes place in the military base.
And he did that also.
Or Day of the Dead.
Right.
Yes, he did. He did that one too. Well, I picked up this beautiful Bub mask at the show floor earlier in the day, and I actually had the whole cast, including the guy that played Bub and Tom Savini and George Romero, sign it. So I have this like perfect Bub head with all their signatures on it and everything like that. But I have all the movies signed, everything.
That is really good. You know, I never thought about getting DVDs and stuff signed like at convention. And I should have, because I've met so many different celebrities. It's insane.
We both go to so many conventions. It's like, why not?
It would have been easy. I mean, I did get certain things signed by some people, but not... Never like DVDs inside. I never even thought about it. I think I have one DVD signed, like by Joanna Angel, the porn star,
mm-hmm.
and she's like the only one that I ever got to sign an actual DVD, but that's a good idea. I don't know why the fuck I never even thought about it.
Yeah, I bring DVDs with me all the time, especially if they're like special editions or something like that. Like, I've got all sorts of special editions, re-releases, Blu-rays, stuff like that. So like any iteration of it, I bring to get signed, just so it's signed. I got the, what's it, Land of the Living Dead, the one of the newer ones he had come out with, signed by that cast and George Romero. Like, you know, I just bring a stack with me, and it's like, here, I need you to sign all this.
I have a signed TV guide with Chris Sandel signed. She was on the cover of the TV guide, and she signed it.
Nice.
But that's like the only time that I actually had something there for somebody to sign. Well, actually, I think I had Maya sign a magazine that she was on, too. But it got damaged in the rain, which is, like, fucked up. Because it was pouring rain in that day. And I had nothing to cover it. And it was just, like, severe water damage to the magazine. But she did sign it.
I mean, hey, listen, it happens. Stuff does get damaged. But I would bring more stuff with you.
Yeah, see, I just don't like carrying shit. That's my problem.
It can be a pain in the ass. But the good thing is if you're staying, like, locally in, like, the same hotel or, like, a hotel that's real close, you can always take, like, a midday break real quick, run, drop stuff off, and go back.
See, usually, like, if I go to like, New York Comic Con, which I frequent quite often, as you know, I usually, if I do stay, I stay in Jersey. Like, I usually stay in Secaucus.
Well, yeah, because
and then
it's a
go
lot
from
cheaper.
Secaucus. Right, it's much cheaper. And
yeah.
And it's only like a 20-minute bus
train
ride. Well, I usually take the bus over.
Oh,
then,
dude, you should look into the train. It's probably so much cheaper.
It's only a couple of dollars even on the bus, and it's a 20-minute ride. And you know, and then once you get there, it's just a, you know, 10-15 minute walk to Javits Center. So it wasn't hard to get there. But usually once I go to the city, I stay until I'm fucking ready to go back to the room. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's that's a pain. But that's sometimes what I do, too. I'll stay in Jersey and just take a train over.
And now, if it's the way it was last year, it took so fucking long to get in the door. Like, once you're in, I wouldn't even leave until it's over because, you know, it took a couple of hours even to get in.
Yeah, they need to really, like, they need to add more dates. That's what they need to do. Like, make it a bi-monthly thing, for the love of God. That'll cut down the amount of people, and everybody will have a chance to go then.
Well, we do have, you know, you've got so many different ones now. You know, Wizard World, they do several throughout the course of the year. They just did the one in Philly in June. And then, you know, we've got the San Diego Comic-Con, which is the real big one. That's coming up, I think, this week. And then, of course, in October, the New York one. So there's always some sort of
Dragon Con
somewhere.
Yeah.
You know. But, you know, I try and pick my spots, see if my people are there, people I want to meet. But most of the people I wanted to meet, I've actually met, which is pretty cool. Because not a lot of people can say that.
Yeah, that's true. That's really true.
Or at the very least, I've seen them in person. Like some of them, you know, like some of the music artists, I may not have actually talked to them, but I did get to see them in person, you know?
Yes, you got to see them perform live.
Right. So that's pretty cool. But now, George Romero, once again, condolences to his family and everything, dead at 77. Like I said, certainly left an indelible mark on pop culture and horror, zombie. I mean, there would be no zombie movies if it wasn't for him. So that's awesome. But still, sad that he passed away. But all
he'll be back. He'll be back with shuffling around.
Exactly.
That'd be amazing if he actually popped back up and became a zombie. They'd keep him on a chain. He'd be a science experiment. What am I saying?
I mean, just think of some of the the Comic-Con crowd's favorites, like Walking Dead. There would be no Walking Dead if there was
no. Oh, no. Absolutely not.
Yeah. And that's a huge show. So popular, especially at the cons, whether it be a horror con or a Comic-Con or whatever. Night of the Living Dead is huge. Even though I don't watch it. And I have no fucking idea who these people are. And I told you a couple of times, I was in the damn Q&A session with them. I didn't even know who they were, so I walked out. Because I don't watch the show. Like,
yeah.
I could have literally walked right in front of Daryl and not known who the fuck he was. I could have been sitting next to him drinking iced tea, and I would have had no idea that was him.
Mm.
Because I literally never watch the show. Other people would probably be like, "What the fuck? Oh my god, it's it!" Like, you know, I'm like, "Who? Who is he? Who's that?"
I haven't watched it in quite a few seasons. It got a little too much for me. Got a little cray cray.
Big show though. And then you got iZombie out. I mean, you know, all the zombie shows. Like, none of them would be around if it wasn't for this guy.
iZombie's good. That's a cute show.
Yeah, another comic book show. DC.
Yeah. I was actually really surprised by that show. I didn't think it was going to be as good as it was.
CW, the comic book network.
It is. They are the comic book network. Comic World. CW, Comic World.
Exactly. And they're adding another one next season. They're adding, what is it, Black Lightning or whatever. So Black Lightning, Legend of Tomorrow, Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, iZombie, and Riverdale. Like, seven comic book shows. That's insane.
That is insane. But you know what? If they're all doing good and they all are good and their integrity is held up, then more power to them.
Exactly.
And there's nothing wrong with doing comic book shows. Like, yeah, like the superhero thing is kind of wearing thin at some points. But on the flip side, it's like they're not always superheroes. Like in iZombie, she's not a superhero.
Sure.
She's not a fully turned zombie. That's just what she is. She has no superpowers or anything like that. And it's her going through life, everything. That's not superhero-ish. And that's like a comic that maybe someone who's not into superheroes would read. So it's good to see a variety of shows.
Well, Walking Dead is a comic book.
Yes, it is.
And the show I watch on Sci-Fi every week, Dark Matter.
Yes.
That's a really good show. And that's a comic book also. I mean, it was a brief, more of a
graphic novel.
Series. Right.
Yeah.
But it was still a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all over the place, you know. You'd be amazed at how many shows are based off of a comic book or a graphic novel nowadays. It's insane. Mm.
It's almost sad that they can't come up with their own ideas.
This is true. Or, from what I hear happened with Dark Matter, was the creator originally pitched the idea and got shot down. And then he pitched it to a comic book publisher and they made it. And then when he re-pitched it after they made the comic book, they picked it up.
Mm.
So that's a way to get your shit done. Make it a comic
book.
Maybe.
Yeah, see if it works as a comic book.
Exactly. And then go back, like he did, after it was a comic book, and then they wanted it all of a sudden. You know, it's probably like the same story, but now all of a sudden you want it, you know?
Yeah, because now it's printed and it's in stores.
Right. yeah, it's just insane. And then you look at, you know, all the new stuff. Cloak and Dagger is coming out. Freeform. That's another Marvel show. Not to mention they're doing like an X-Men show this fall on Fox. Mm. I forget what the fuck it's called. Something like Mutant or Extra. I forget what the fuck it's called. Don't start me lying, because I will. I'll start lying all kinds of crazy shit. But it is, I know it's based in the X-Men universe. And it's showing fun. They didn't run in the ad, on Fox.
The Gifted.
The Gifted. There we go. Very good. So, yeah, there's going to be more comic books. So I guess they're not going anywhere. You're just going to get more and more and more.
That's for certain.
Yeah. Now, some controversy there in Global Force Wrestling is their champion, Alberto El Patron, has been suspended because of the incident that occurred in an Orlando airport with his on-again, off-again fiance Paige, where the two apparently get into some sort of domestic incident, is how it's being categorized, that was still being investigated. But no one's been arrested or anything yet. But as this incident was being investigated, Jeff Jarrett and the powers that be at Global Force Wrestling decided that maybe it should be in our best interest to suspend Alberto El Patron, who happens to be the Undisputed Champion, because, of course, he beat Lashley at the Slammiversary pay-per-view, and he holds the unified GFW and formerly Impact Wrestling Championship. So he's currently suspended, but that's not really affecting his appearances on the show, because, of course, they film all their shows in advance, and they got all this shit in the can. So, basically, Alberto El Patron is on every fucking Impact for the next 6 weeks or so.
Right.
Prominently.
But even though he's suspended.
Right. Because all these shows are in the can already.
Mm-hmm.
And probably by the time they take their next round of shows, like in mid-August, his suspension will probably be lifted. And, I mean, from a TV standpoint, it would be like, was he ever even gone? Because you're going to see him on TV every fucking week.
Yeah. Good point.
But I'm wondering here, like, the footage was available, audio footage was available on TMZ. They did release that, and I did hear the audio there. And the first thing I thought was, Paige really needs to get her life together.
She needs to get her shit together.
She really does.
Yeah, she does.
Because when you listen to it, it's clearly the two of them arguing. You know, they try and say that it was a fan asking for their autograph or their picture, and they got annoyed or whatever the hell. But they're clearly arguing with each other when you hear the audio. And you clearly hear Paige saying all kinds of shit to him, that she fucking hates him, and I want you out of my fucking life, and blah, 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 and this and the other, and they're going back and forth. And it is just crazy. Now, then she later on defends him and acts like it's almost like the battered woman syndrome, where if she was being the one that's on the end of the... And there, we don't want to accuse Alberto El Patron of doing anything that he hasn't been found guilty of, but allegedly even Paige's family has said they have noticed marks on Paige on occasion since she's been in this relationship with him.
You never know. That or it's some really kinky stuff.
Right. You never know. And she may bruise rather
easily. Yeah. She is pale, so it is possible. But, I mean, she does need to get her shit together, man.
She really does.
Just,
I mean,
she's so young. She screwed up her whole career already.
Right, and has... Right. I mean, she basically could have been the centerpiece of that whole women's division in WWE.
Yep.
And she just fucked it up.
Yes, she did.
And, I mean, she hasn't been released from WWE yet, but I'm sure she's not doing herself any favors in terms of her ever coming back in a prominent role again.
Ain't that the truth?
I mean, you know, we had mentioned last week how she supported her man, Alberto El Patron, and sat in the audience at the Slammiversary pay-per-view. Even though she was under a luchador mask, people still knew it was her.
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to be on TV for a competing company if you work for WWE and under contract to them. She's not really allowed to appear on their TV. Yet she's sitting there right in the front row. You know, yeah, she had a mask on, but still. People knew it was her.
Yeah, it's like, oh, who's the female luchador? Wonder who can't show their face on TV.
Right.
Let me think. And whose boyfriend's wrestling in this card? Give me a bit to think about that.
And they said her name was on the back of the chair. That was the same reserved for Saraya J. Davis or whatever her real name is. And so they knew, everybody knew it was her.
That's just ridiculous. She's just so effed up.
She really is.
It's sad, too. It really is.
Right. I mean, I'm not going to hate on Alberto because, you know, hey, I've been known to date some girls in their 20s as well. Hey, you know, it happens. No
it does.
There. But I'm just saying.
You got to be prepared for them to not be emotionally mature.
Right. And if it's going to. It, you know, we can't condone if it really is some sort of, you know, domestic abuse or anything like that going on. You know, certainly that's not cool. But it seems like the two of them, they really need to be apart. I mean, I don't see how this is a positive thing in any way.
Mm.
They're constantly arguing, constantly fighting. I mean, you know. On again, off again. Like one second they were supposedly broken up, then the next day all of a sudden they're together again, and you know, and Paige is in constant denial. Like it's the classic battered woman syndrome there.
Mm.
Where,
it could be. I mean, she could just be nuts. You're very, very crazy. Females are really crazy at that age.
And she I mean, I think looking back when Jim Ross was asked years ago, like, whether or not he thought Paige should be on the main roster, and I remember him remarking that even though some people might be very good in the ring, that they may not have the maturity level to handle
the fame
in the spotlight,
and everything.
Right, and being on the road. And I remember him saying that specifically as it related to her. Now you kind of like, damn, this man looking in a crystal ball or something?
Yeah.
It's kind of so accurate. You know, but
I mean, maybe he
knew something. You know, he obviously spent time with these people.
That's the thing. I mean, when you spend time with them, you pick up those little personality traits that you know. At our age, we know what we see in younger people, like those certain things that are said, certain personality traits. We know what that is.
Right.
Been there, done that. So it's very possible spending all that time, he picked up on stuff and could just tell.
Right. Right. And I mean, of course she was going to be talented in terms of her ring work because she grew up in the business her whole life, her whole family are wrestlers. I mean, you know, her mother was taking bumps while she was carrying her, you know, she's been in a ring literally her whole life. And, you know, but she obviously wasn't ready for this.
No.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's hard for anybody to be put in a public eye like that. And you know, a lot, your privacy is gone.
Maybe it's not everything you thought it was going to be, and you start to become very disillusioned. at a young age, and that can cause problems.
Right. Right. So, hopefully she gets her shit together.
I hope so. It'd be nice, but she ruined her career.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing is, though, she's still young enough she can come back.
And yeah, true.
We know in most areas of sport and entertainment, there is forgiveness. You know, people do tend to forgive and forget. So I think that she can still have a great career if that's what she wants. But I think she just needs to get her fucking self together, period. Whether
Amen.
She wants this shit or not, you know, because she's a mess at the moment. And I think that relationship with Alberto Del Rio or Patron, whatever the fuck he wants to call himself, is just not something she should be in.
Not emotionally healthy for her.
Exactly.
Or mentally healthy for her.
Right. Right. And I don't want to mess up El Patron's thing. I mean, you know. But,
like I said, it could be her. She could just be unstable. And in that case, she needs to get some type of help. And, you know, we don't know the situation. I mean, there's a number of factors that could go into it. But, I mean, regardless, I hope she comes out of it okay. And obviously being in a relationship with him is exasperating things rather than making things better for her. So, you know, it's one of those things to think about.
True. So now, I'm wondering, are they married? Like, I'm looking at this and saying that they're married.
But really?
I don't know. That's unconfirmed. But now,
you never know. Vegas, baby.
Exactly. Now, other TNA news or Impact Wrestling Global Force Run, whatever the hell they want to call themselves now. A female wrestler who does have her shit together, Gail Kim, did announce that this year will be her last year being an in-ring performer. And, you know, of course, she's been plagued with injuries for the last, I'd say, what, 6-8 months, something like that. So she hasn't really performed at all. But she is going to have one little last run here at GFW, and this is going to be it. Well, at the end of the year, she's calling it a day and will be retiring. Amazing career for Gail Kim. Mm. She did pretty good for herself in terms of the marriage department where she married Irvine, Robert Irvine, the celebrity chef.
Yeah.
And he has a talk show now.
Yeah.
So. Ugh. Yeah, so I guess she, you know, she's got that talk show.
Doesn't need to work. She doesn't need to bring home a paycheck anymore. She can take it easy. And you know what? If I were her, being that she's had a lot of injuries lately and, you know, it's starting to take its toll, you know what? Hey, take it easy. You had a great career.
Amazing
you have
career.
Nothing. You have nothing to be ashamed of. It was fantastic. It's a storybook career. Anybody would want your career. So it's like you can just walk away and know that you've left a mark on wrestling history, period.
Absolutely. I mean, and a lot of people talk about the women's revolution on WWE now and all the great matches that Charlotte and Sasha Banks and Bayley and all of them have now. But you can go back 10 years ago and what they were doing in TNA.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that, Gail Kim and Awesome Kong and some of those matches. They were amazing matches.
Oh, hell yeah.
Amazing. I mean, head and shoulders above anything that WWE was doing at the time, and certainly comparable with what the women's revolution is doing nowadays. So they were doing that shit 10 years ago. And Gail Kim was certainly at the center of it all. Amazing performer. Nice lady as well. Like, you know, I've met Gail Kim a couple of times and always very nice to me and very professional, very, very good. performer, and certainly wish her the best if she truly does call it a day. Former WWE Women's Champion, and of course, multiple-time TNA Women's Champion as well. Certainly one of the greatest female performers, I'd say, of the last 20 years, probably of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, I would absolutely put her in that list, 100%.
Yeah. I remember I met her husband, too, and he was hitting on my date, like flirting with my date. This is before he married Gail Kim. Like Irvine, he was the chef, and we had to go to this event, and he was, I guess, the chef for this event.
Mm-hmm.
And he was hitting on my date. Can you believe that?
Well, hey, they're a bit crazy.
Yeah.
Once they get full of themselves.
Yeah. Cray cray. But, and I never hit on Gail Kim, you know. I didn't. And I had, like, a lot of her information, too. Like, which is crazy. So I could have hit on her if I wanted. Isn't it?
You could have.
Right. I mean, I had, like, her actual cell phone or email and all this. Like, we were communicating for a while because of the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it is what it is. And then I met her in person.
She's 40. She doesn't look 40.
Yeah. Amazing.
She doesn't look 40 at all. She's so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, amazing career. So
absolutely, 100%.
Now, of course, speaking of women wrestling, it's all about the girls this week. The Mae Young Classic took place, at least the first couple of rounds took place, in Full Sail University down in Florida. They taped it. It's not going to air on the network until August, after SummerSlam. So it's going to be released binge style, similar to the way Netflix releases their series, where they release all the episodes at once. So unlike the Cruiserweight Classic, which aired on a weekly basis leading up to the live finale, the Mae Young Classic is going to be released all at once. Well, I think they're going to release 4 episodes 1 week and 4 episodes the following week, and then they're going to do the live finals, which will be live on the network. But they taped everything over the past couple of days in the Full Sail University.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to give any spoilers. I'm trying my best to avoid spoilers.
No, you keep your mouth shut. Zip those lips.
I haven't read any.
Okay.
I don't know who won or anything. I want to wait until they release the episodes on the network, and then I'll watch it and enjoy it. I mean, I don't want to do it. It's a shame that we're in the society that we're in, that everybody has to fucking spoil everything. But that's just the way it is. And, I mean, like, as it was happening, you had people fucking spoiling shit on Twitter and all that, which I did my damnedest to stay off the site, not follow the hashtag, anything like that. You know, and just for the next month and change, I'm going to try and avoid any spoilers so that when I do watch it on the network, it's going to be fresh to me and I'm not going to know what happened. But I don't know why they're waiting so long to fucking put it out. Like, at least, I mean, that's over a month before they're going to release these episodes.
Maybe they have something planned at SummerSlam to get it, give it a little more of a hype boost. That way when they release it, it's like on a high note, maybe.
I don't know what their reasoning is, and I know they're going to do the finals live in September, so we do have to wait for that. And then when you think from the standpoint of the performers, you know, they filmed the first couple of rounds in July, mm-hmm. and the finals aren't going to take place till like damn near 2 months later. You know, I think it's like September 10th or something like that when they do the finals.
Yeah, it is an odd thing that they're doing. There's no reason to wait. I mean, hell, they could have done it live too, but
true, and
it would have been a live special on the network. Would have been a perfect selling point,
right? Or at the very least, similar to the way they did the Cruiserweight Classic, where they put the one episode out every week leading up to the finals, and that gives you, you know, a little 8-episode miniseries or whatever the hell they want to do leading up to the live finals. Perfect.
Right.
But, you know, at least it's more than they used to do with women's wrestling. And,
yeah.
And quite an interesting group of performers. I mean, a lot of indie girls finally getting their chance to get seen on a main stage. You know, women like Mercedes Martinez and Mia Yim, veterans who've been in the game for years. I mean, these are women that I've seen, you know, wrestling for 10 years or more. Some of them, mm-hmm. I think Mercedes Martinez, probably 15 years. And, you know, I mean, I've seen her wrestle in front of less than 100 people. And all kinds of real little small crowds and indie shows and all over the place. And it's good to finally have her on the main stage where a big audience can see her. And you know, I'm happy that these girls are finally getting a platform to do that, because there was a generation of the indie girls, the last generation before the current gen of girls, you know, that early 2000 era of indie girl, they never got a chance to get in WWE.
No, they didn't, and that's a shame.
And it was a lot of them that were really good. I mean, you know, I remember like Lacey and like...
Lacey was good.
What's it, Daisy Hayes or I always loved Becky Dales, but she wasn't.
Oh, yeah, Becky.
But, I mean, you know, the idea was a lot of them were really good wrestling. Most of them didn't get a chance to ever really make any good money in wrestling. And most of them retired very young, I guess, because, you know, they were busting their ass on the indies and they never got their shot. Most of them.
I mean,
meanwhile,
a lot has to do with the fact that they have, like, NXT helped a lot.
Now, but I mean, at the time these girls were around,
they had nothing.
And WWE was busy hiring models. As much as I love Maryse and think she's definitely one of the most attractive women in wrestling history, but she wasn't really a good wrestler.
No.
But the fact that she was, you know, on TV as the champion. She was the Divas champion for a while. And could barely wrestle. And, you know, Michelle McCool was another one, you know, who was a former Playboy model.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was a champion also. And, you know, it was just a shame that, and they were great. And I love Maryse and Michelle. I thought they were really cool. But the fact that girls that were actually busting their ass learning how to wrestle didn't get a shot, and they did. That's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
So it just made, you know, that group of girls that came up during that period, a lot of them, like, retired really early. I think, like, Lacey retired, I think she was only 29 when she retired. And, like, Daisy Hayes, like, around the same age. Like, they didn't stay in the game long because there was no money in it for them, and there were no opportunities.
Yeah, it's a shame. That was a tough time. Shame.
So, yeah. So it's unfortunate. So I'm glad that, you know, a lot of them are getting a chance. At least, even if it's a one shot thing, at least they will be forever seen on the WWE Network as a part of the Mae Young Classic, and people will be able to go back and look at it on demand or whatever for years and years to come. And at least, you know, they do have something.
Right.
You know. So I am happy about that. Because some of these women have been in the game a real long time, certainly deserve it. you know, just like some of these indie guys that are finally getting a shot.
It's really is refreshing to see all the indie people up and coming. Like, it's like, yes, finally, you know, instead of hiring schmutzes, they're hiring people that actually are tried and true and have a fan base already. And, you know, it's totally a different thing.
But, see, I noticed, though, in cases like that, WWE likes to fuck over most of the non-homegrown talent in most.
Yes, that is true.
Like you see, like somebody like Roman Reigns never was on the indies. He's their guy. They created him. They had him come through their developmental system, and that was it. And he's the guy they've been pushing down everybody's throat. And it's just one of those things that he's going to get that shot where somebody who spent a lot of time on the indies may not. I mean, I know people got behind Daniel Bryan, but I think that was more – I think Daniel Bryan got over in spite of them, not necessarily because of them.
Yeah, I think he got over in spite of them. But, I mean, he was still good. He was very good in the ring.
Right.
I always enjoyed watching him work. He was great.
But, I mean, think of somebody like Cesaro, who, you know, in the indies is Claudio Castagnoli. He's had a tough time, you know.
Yes. Real,
you know, he's a tag team champion now. But, I mean, as far as getting a significant singles push.
They were pushing him, and then they weren't pushing him, and then he, like, fell off the map, and then they're pushing him again, and then he falls off the map again. It's like give the guy a shot, for the love of God.
Right. Even though, I mean, they are pushing Joe, and we know Joe's been around. He's had his run in the indies and with TNA and all that. But I guess they're getting a little more friendlier with TNA, which... kind of as we head into Monday Night Raw this week and the reveal of whomever Kurt Angle is communicating with, and there is speculation that it is going to most likely be Dixie Carter, who was the longtime head of TNA. We'll see whether that comes into fruition or not, but that would be interesting. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that WWE has...
cross-platformed.
Right, somebody from the opposition, as you know. After going tooth and nail with Eric Bischoff in the Monday Night Wars, McMahon turned around and hired Eric Bischoff to play the on-screen general manager for Monday Night Raw for several years. So they've done it before, and he certainly would do it if it makes sense from a business standpoint.
Yes.
So, they just did a special on Kurt Angle on the network, and they actually interviewed Dixie Carter for the special. So she's already been on the network. But I guess you kind of have to interview her. I mean, the bulk of Kurt Angle's wrestling career actually took place in TNA.
Yes, he wasn't on WWE. Some people probably think, because he's so well known, that he had a really long run there. He didn't.
Right.
It was like super short.
Right. I mean, he probably did a good, 4 or 5 years in WWE, but he was in TNA for about 12.
Yeah, it's a lot longer than he was with WWE.
Right. Right. And some of his best matches were in TNA, like the matches he had with AJ Styles, with Joe, and Daniels, and, you know, that whole group of individuals that came up from TNA. And that's surprising, too, that AJ is pushed as well as he is, and he's basically an indie / TNA guy.
True, and King of the Ring.
But I mean, the thing is, obviously, he's not a WWE-created guy.
But he is good, and he has people behind him.
He's probably the best in the business at the moment.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I guess maybe they're recognizing that and giving him his due, because they should.
McMahon never recognizes that.
I'm trying to be positive. Why do you need to pop my bubble like that? Like, really? Like, you just walk up with a nice little knee and you're like, boop, pop?
I think only once. Well, with Ric Flair, I guess they did. They had no choice with Ric Flair. Like back in the day, Ric Flair, he came in, they let him win the WWE title, which that was almost unheard of.
Yes.
That somebody that held a world title in another federation would come to WWF and win their belt. It was like, never happened.
Yeah, that's, and it hasn't really happened since either.
Right, I think Ric Flair is probably the only one I can really think of, and AJ Styles.
Oh, yeah, true. I didn't even think about that.
And I guess if you want to count the Ring of Honor belt as a world title, you know, it's debatable whether it is or not, but I guess you probably can't call it a world title when he held it, but Daniel Bryan, when he was the Ring of Honor champion, I certainly wouldn't call it a world title, because they were playing in front of 100 people in, you know, VFWs and shit like that, so I wouldn't have considered it a world title, but he was the Ring of Honor champion,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, he did go on to win the WWE title, but, they're the only ones I can think of that actually held a world title in another organization first and then came to WWE and won theirs.
Mm.
Well, and Booker T. So it's three.
Well, yes, Booker T.
So I think Ric Flair, Booker T, and AJ Styles. I could be wrong. There might be another one. But the other way around, where they've been world champions in WWE and then won a world title somewhere else, it's a lot of them.
Oh, tons.
You know, I mean, everybody from Hogan to Savage to Kevin Nash.
Razor Ramon.
Well, he was never a world champion, though.
Oh, shit, yeah. Sorry.
Goldberg. Goldberg is...
There you go.
Because Goldberg was WCW champion first, and then when he came to WWE, he won there. So he's another one. So it's Goldberg, Booker T, AJ Styles, and Ric Flair. Might be more. Who knows? The more I talk,
It's not a lot, though. That's the thing. It's nothing compared to the output of WWE people that have gone to other places and gotten their belts. That's
exactly
for sure.
Right. That's the point. Exactly. There's few when you look the other way around. So it is odd when they do put over a guy who was the world champion somewhere else. So we'll see what happens, whether Dixie Carter shows up or who this mystery person will be. Some people even speculate it could be Stephanie, which would be crazy. Is Stephanie cheating on Triple H?
Oh, boy.
Who knows?
Yeah,
I hate when they get all storyline, soap opera-y, crazy like that.
Yeah, it is pretty doofy.
So, the box office this week, War for the Planet of the Apes, number one. $6.5 million. Good take for them. Bumping Spider-Man Homecoming out of the top spot. Only spent 1 week there, but still did an impressive $45.2 million, bringing its domestic total up to $208 million. Very respectable there. Despicable Me, Baby Driver, and The Big Sick round out the top five. And still hanging in there. Number six, Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman.
Almost another $7 million.
Wow.
Exact. And bringing its domestic total up to $380 million.
Good for Wonder Woman.
Born total, 384. So Wonder Woman's done very well.
Good.
Very, very well. I mean, you put domestically, Wonder Woman has beaten Batman versus Superman by $50 million.
Mm.
And it's only been released half the time that Batman versus Superman. So if they keep it out as long as Batman versus Superman is released, it could end up in the $400 million range.
Most likely, yeah.
Domestically.
Yes, not worldwide.
Right. Ironically, worldwide, Batman versus Superman is actually still beating it.
Mm.
Worldwide, Batman vs. Superman made $873 million.
Wow.
To $764 million currently.
It's gaining.
It certainly is.
It's gaining.
Whether or not it will totally pass, domestically, it might hit $400 million. It certainly, if it stays at this pace, it's very possible it's going to cross that $400 million threshold.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, you know, the weekend, if you're still getting about 7 million, we're what, 7 weeks after the release?
Yes.
You're still getting $7 million on a weekend?
Yeah, that's a lot of money
that
for
is.
A 7-week-old movie.
Exactly. So I think it could easily, and it only needs another $20 million, it could easily cross that $400 million
in 2 more weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very realistic like expectation now.
Mm.
Which would be awesome. Because not very many movies, period, have ever crossed $400 million domestically. And when you put it up against other superhero movies, that will put it in the same class as the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
as Captain America Civil War,
mm.
Iron Man 3, and both The Dark Knight Rises, The Dark Knight, and the two Avenger movies, both the Age of Ultron and the first Avengers movie. Those are like the only comic book movies to ever make more than $400 million.
That's a pretty illustrious list there.
Absolutely. So, and right now, Wonder Woman's right behind Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which did $386 million, and she'll probably beat that by next weekend.
Probably, yeah.
I mean,
she's right behind.
Yeah. So that's very impressive. I guess we were wrong.
No, I said I wanted it to do good.
Oh, yeah, we definitely wanted it to do wrong. We were always questioning whether it would, but
it's
definitely doing well.
Well, it's good. I'm glad. The timing was right. That's what I was worried about.
Absolutely.
So I'm so happy that it's doing good.
So that is it for us this week. Definitely want to thank everybody for listening, subscribing to the show as you do, free of charge, in iTunes and on Google Play. Of course, TonyLaneShow.com is the destination to hear all the archive stuff. You can stream the new shows as well. And, of course, blogtalkradio.com/TonyLaneShow to hear the show live. So, for Maris, I am Tony Lane, and we will see you next week. It's Battleground Week. Pajama
yes.
Prison Match.
Oh, boy.
Think out loud. The Tony Lane Show.
What kind of world are we living in that this is considered entertainment?
TonyLaneShow.com.